We are now going to deal with invalidity in a quantified system. We've introduced quantifiers. Given any x, for all x, it's like this. There exists an x such that, so on. And this complicates things for proof of invalidity. It complicates it a way you probably wouldn't expect. Let's take a look at a particular invalid argument that goes like this. Given any x, cx implies a of x. There exists an x such that cx and wx, therefore, for given any x, wx implies ax. This is patently invalid, but when you try to make the assignments for this, it doesn't work. Remember, the only way to make the conclusion false is to assign it true, false. That makes it false. Now we have to assign the premises true, which means we have to have true here. A has to be false. Now to save line one, you would have to make C false. False implies false is true. If you make C true, it's true implies false, it would be false. But C needs to be true here in this line. It's C and W, so they both have to be true. So there's no way to show that this argument is invalid, when it clearly is. So what's gone wrong? Well, what has gone wrong, if you can stick with me on this, it sounds a little like science fiction, but what has gone wrong is that we have introduced how many things there are that we're talking about. And the number of things that have been asserted to exist in this argument is one thing. There exists an X such that C and W. And if that thing were the only thing in the universe, this argument would be valid. But you and I know that it's not the only thing in the universe. And if we then do what we call expand each of these lines, so that we are asserting that there are at least two things in reality, at least two things in the universe, it will then turn out to be invalid. And this is the way we do it. We take line one and we rewrite it for thing A. This is not instantiation. We're not using UI. We're just saying, we'll say that there's thing A so that we can expand this and say also there's a thing B like this. For universal statements, we expand them by conjunction. Since it's true for everything, it's true for thing A, thing B, thing C, thing D, as many as there may be. So CB implies AB. That's the expansion of line one. It asserts C implies A for thing A and for thing B. But when we come to existentials, when we go to expand them, we can't expand them with conjunction. This tells us only that we know there's one such X. But what we can write is CA and WA or CB and WB. Now, we haven't asserted that there's a second thing, but we've allowed the possibility. A or B. Remember, this means one or the other, and maybe both. It allows us to be uncertain about it. And now we expand the conclusion, and since it's a universal, we expand it by conjunction. Thing A entails A of A, and WB entails AB. And now when we go to make these same assignments, it'll work. We can get it done. We can assign it so that, say, this is true and AA is false. We're not doing that for now. True implies false is false. Since the conclusion is a conjunction, one member of it is false, the entire thing is false. Both have to be true for a conjunction to be true. We come over here and we remain consistent with those assignments. We will get that FA is false. And we want CA to be true. There's nothing that prevents us from making CA true. There it is. Just the opposite. We want CA to be false. So as to save this, false implies false is true. And since this is a conjunction, both members have to be true. Now the first member is true. But then that means we have to put an F down here and make this CA false. But this is a disjunction. So the fact that CA is false here makes this side of the disjunct false. But this says either one or the other is true, so we just make both these true. And now this is true, so this line is true. And then we come up here, having to make CB true, we must make AB true. But there's nothing to prevent that. You see, AB has no assignment at all. So we get false implies false, which is true. True implies true, which is true. So this line is true. Here we have true and true, and it's a disjunct. One or the other is true. One of them is, so this is true. And that's how it works. It depends how many things there are in the universe. If there was only one thing in the universe, that would have been a valid argument. But if there are two things in the universe, it's not. And you and I know there are more than two things in the universe. Now, here's what you must do when you come to an invalid argument, then. If it's quantified, and you're going to construct a proof of invalidity, you expand the universal lines by conjunction. Thing A, thing B. You expand the existential lines by disjunction. Either this or this. Either thing A or thing B. And you expand as many times as you need to show that it's invalid. How many is that? It's easy. There's a rule. You need to expand to a universe with one more member than the number of existential quantifiers in the premises. I'm going to say it again very slowly. Watch my lips. You need to expand to a universe with one more member than the number of existential quantifiers in the premises. There's only one, right? So we need a two-membered universe. If this argument had two existential quantifiers in it, we'd expand to a third time. We'd put and thing C. If it had three existential quantifiers, we'd expand to a four-membered universe. Now, every once in a while, there's an argument you can show to be invalid without going to all the trouble of expansion. But that's relatively rare, and you can't tell the difference when you come upon it, so just do the expansion and you'll always be safe. In case this needs more illustration, and I'm assuming it does, we're now going to do several more invalidity proofs where the argument is quantified. And to do that, I'm going to have to take this off. So we'll take a short break while I clear the board, and then we'll come back and do several more examples of this. Okay? So are we stopped now?
Yeah.
Okay. See how much room this takes up? If I make it big enough that everybody can see it, if just one of these proofs takes up both boards. Okay. Thank you. This is really silly. And now it's wet and we can't write on it. Holy shit. some wet spots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get a hair dryer and blow it. All right. Okay, you ready? Okay, here's an example. We're going to do the following argument. Some physicians are quacks. We're going to use P for physician and Q for quack. Some quacks are not responsible. We'll use R for responsible. Therefore, some physicians are not responsible. This is an invalid argument, and we're going to need to expand the conclusion and the premises in order to make the TF assignments. Some physicians are quacks. There exists at least one thing that is a physician and a quack. Some quacks are not responsible. Therefore, some physicians are not responsible. That conclusion does not follow from those premises. It's an invalid argument. But we need to expand. Now, what's the rule of thumb for expansion? Expand to a universe with one more member than the number of existential quantifiers in the premises. To see how many existential quantifiers are in the premises, you just need to use your eyes. You look there and you see how many are there. Two. So we need a three-membered universe. Clear? So we take line one and we rewrite line one, PA and QA, and PB and QB. That's the second member, and the third member is PC and QC. And for line two, we're going to do the same thing. QA and not RA. Oh, sorry. I put conjunctions between them, and you're supposed to put disjunctions between them. These are existential, so they're expanded by either or, not and. Only universals are expanded by and. All right? Or P, B, and Q, and R. No. Hold it. Yeah. Q, B, and not R, B, or Q, C, and not R, C. There's the expansion of the second line. And the expansion of the third line is also existential, so it's also expanded by either or. But we don't have to expand to one more member, including this existential quantifier. It's only the number of existential quantifiers in the premises, not the conclusion. That doesn't count. So this comes down to being PA and not RA, or PB and not RB, or PC and not RC. All right, now, because the conclusion is a disjunct, it's a couple of them. Every member of the disjunct has to be false to make it false. However, the members of the disjunct are themselves conjuncts. Here's a conjunction, here's a conjunction, here's a conjunction. And only one member in each has to be false to falsify it. So looking over here, I'm going to want to make, and I'm just guessing. This is how you do it. it's trial and error. You try it one way, if it doesn't work, you try it another way. But let me put the T's and F's up here in a different color for you. So I'm telling, what I think I'm going to do here is make this true and this false. That falsifies this one. And what I have to do then is be consistent with that over here. So that makes this PA true and this RA false. All right? Now, there is no Q over here. There's no QA, QB, QC. And so since I have a Q here, if I just make that true, true and true is true. And since this line's a disjunct, only one member of it has to be true, so we've already taken care of that line. That's true. This, however, the first of these disjuncts is false. So I have to make sure that one of the others doesn't turn out that way, while I still, nevertheless, assign these so that they do turn out to be false. So what I need to do here, I can put false over FB, because there's only one FB, and that occurs here, and it's in a line that's already true, so it doesn't make any difference to it. And then I assign PC, and where's the PC? I can make that false too, and that takes care of this conjunction is false, this is false, this is false. We have false or false or false, so the whole line is false. And now I've done that in such a way that it leaves me to be able to assign QB true here and not RB to be true, because I didn't need to assign it here to falsify this line. And now one of these disjuncts is true, so this whole line is also true. And there's the proof that this is an invalid argument. I was lucky in the way I guessed, okay? I picked just arbitrarily, let's try this. See if it works. Sometimes it doesn't. You got to go back and reassign. If there's any way that it works, if there's any way that the conclusion can be false while the premises are true, the argument's invalid. But there are possibly, for any given argument, there are a number of ways to show it. Or maybe there are a number of ways that could work, but several of them don't and only one does. Maybe it looks like there are a number that could work, and only one does. And you only know that by trial and error. So when I give you an invalidity proof on the final exam, it will be marked, this argument's invalid. I won't give you a whole bunch and say, pick out the invalid one and prove it. It's invalid. I'll tell you which one it is, and it'll require you to expand the lines, and it will require you to make the assignments. But it will be very clear which one you do that with, and it will not be anything more difficult than just what you're learning now. Let's try some more examples so as to get you more acclimated to it, since you know that there will be one on the final exam. Here's another example. Try this. None but the brave deserve the fair. And we'll use BX and DX. None but the brave deserve the fair. Every soldier is brave. SX for soldier. Therefore, none but soldiers deserve the fair. Okay? Now, the question is how to formulate it in the first place. How do you do none but? That's what I call an exceptive. All but, none but, except for, and so on. And if you remember, you reverse the order of the antecedent and consequent. None but the brave deserve the fair. So we don't write down, given any X, if X is brave, X deserves the fair. By the way, you do know what this means, right? It means that a brave knight deserves the affections of the fair ladies. Only the brave deserve that from the female side. So this says, given any X, if X is brave, X deserves the fair. But that won't do it. That doesn't tell us that only they do. In order to do that, you have to reverse them. So we put down, given any X, if X deserves the attentions of the fair ladies, then X is brave, from which it follows that if you're not brave, you don't deserve, by modus tollens. All right, that's premise one. None but the brave deserve the fair. Every soldier is brave. Given any X, if X is a soldier, X is brave. That's line two. Can you see that? Am I in the way? There you go. Therefore, none but soldiers deserve the fair. Therefore, only if soldier deserves the fair. What follows if is soldier. Ordinarily, it would come to the left side of the arrow, but now we move it to the right side. Therefore, only if soldier deserves the fair. Okay, it's clearly invalid. From the fact that none but the brave deserve the fair and all soldiers are brave, it doesn't follow that only soldiers are brave. So how do we do this? Well, we have to expand the lines. Do you really? What's the rule of thumb? The rule of thumb is expand the lines to one more member than, you should say it with me, the number of existential quantifiers in the premises. How many existential quantifiers in the premises? Unless you're hallucinating, none. So you don't need to expand at all. All you have to do is put down the T's and F's. Here's true, false. That's the only way to make the conclusion false. That gives you true for DX and false for SX. And all you have to do is make BX true. True implies true is true. False implies anything else is true, and you're done. So you don't need to expand at all. There were no existential quantifiers, no expansion. All right. We'll come back next session, and we'll tackle some more of these and try to get you accommodated to them and used to them. And then we'll look at a whole bunch of mixed bag proofs and try to get you all set up and prepared for them as well. Till next time, practice.